Hello and welcome, Race Brain Podcast. My name is Rich Ryan. Joining me, as always, Bracken Crocker, Jack Bauer. Today, we have some races to talk about. Had a little bit of OCR happening in Southern California. Also, in Wisconsin?
It was Wisconsin.
Also in Wisconsin. Then we had some Hyrox events happening in the UK, in Manchester in particular. Had a world record go down, kind of. And then we have a Jack Bauer special. Jack, give us a tease. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, so pretty much during the off season, they keep cutting back prize money over and over again. I'm like, I wonder what it's been through the years. So I just kind of did a deep dive and was just looking at what every single brand has paid through the years. Is it the industry trend? Is it all shifting to hybrid from OCR? What's going on there? So yeah, just kind of a little
history.
Bit of a deep dive in there.
An oral history about the monetary winnings that have
got some serious help from people, including Bracken, going out taking pictures in the garage of his checks.
He was basement. Just flexing.
Bracken
I've
had
been
so
waiting
many
for
checks
decade
back
for
then.
That moment.
Yeah, those are. He didn't take those in real time. He just went through his phone and sent the ones that he had.
It's just stuff I send out to all my friends weekly.
Yeah, he just have it on like a forward because he already sent it before. Yeah.
Remember, Bracken, we
can take this. Just you can just text me if you want. And you're like, let me have my moment, bragging to Rich. So I was like, he's proud.
Jack, you sent. Now you did some whole after our last week's episode talking about how we assume that the Maastricht course was fast. Jack sent me his whole thing. It was based on math, and then immediately looked at the numbers like these don't make sense. And he's like, I have no follow up. Did you ever look back?
I had
into
other
those?
Stuff that I had to do. I'm going to dive into that a little bit more, but I think I found a way to figure out which courses are actually fast or slow based on old results.
The ones you sent didn't.
Well,
make
he's
sense.
Pulling from a bad range of data.
That's the thing. It's like, can it be?
He pulls from modern day.
Yeah,
data. I think it can tighten it up a little bit.
That's why I asked when they switched from 25 to 12 and a half for the ropes. Because once that happens, now suddenly times are not going to be as skewed in the slow direction anymore. And that'll bring things a little bit more even.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know a year? Because last time I did it was, I think, Dallas 2020, right before COVID. And I had a 12 and a half or a 25. I've never raced on a 12 and a half.
I've never done a 25. And I started, my first was like May 21 or something, like June 21.
Okay. So COVID may have been the cause of just shortening that rope.
Because I don't think it was 25 when they did the that Invitational in Dallas where Megita and
point.
Hunter and Rachel von der Ack showed out.
Yep.
I think that was four lengths.
Likewise, okay. I've done two pros and both have been 25 meter.
Really?
Yeah, I've never done the 12 and a half on pro.
One was the poop race and then... I don't know the other one. Orlando?
Chicago.
Oh, no, Orlando, you did teams with Michelle, right?
All right, quick. I got to run this past you. I've got two people that know the sport. We made a post on Running Public about a couple weeks ago saying our new hybrid training plan is online. And Megita right away said, another example of someone who literally doesn't race hybrid doing hybrid.
Dang,
what statute of limitations on hybrid? Is that a legit statement? I can take it. I just need to know from the panel.
Well, it seems from the current market that it's like you could run a race never. You could just like have done lifted weights and run real slow and be like, here's what mm-hmm. you do for Hyrox. I saw a 6 week Hyrox program.
A 6 week?
I was like, here's a great way to not be prepared for it. Was like some CrossFit coaching company in Europe. It was like 6 weeks, be ready for your first CrossFit. So I think zero. I think like none. No races of all time seems to be the appropriate amount.
So I've done a double every year for 4 years, but I haven't done a pro since 2020. Does that run out on statute of limitations for knowing how to train for Hyrox? Is that fair? Do I need to do another one just to be relevant?
That's kind of the same argument as, did you have to be a really good football player to coach in the NFL, for instance? It's like, I don't agree with that necessarily. Like, you talk this every single week. You've stepped your toe in the ring. Yes, you don't have the same experience that Megita or Rich or anybody who's competing individually at a high level. But mm-hmm. let's not forget, you were basically doing the old school version of hybrid, which was stadium races for many years. you have a lot of athletes who have had success in the hybrid arena. I don't know. It's fine.
What if like, trying to think of a name here, Jackie, probably help me out. What if it was like, no, I don't even know if that would work. What's the dude from Alaska, Lars's buddy, who was Chad Trammell, right? Who was like pretty good at OCR. What if he came out and was like
really good at time? Yeah.
Really? Okay. If he was like, I got an OCR program, would it be like, that'd be fine?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Because what's 5% of OCR is just running.
Mm. You got second at Leadville 100 also, not just OCR. You're going to believe him, whatever he tells you for training.
And I think it's important to have failed. Like he struggled with obstacles that time. And I think that's important because then you understand like how to work on it and get better. People who are good at it naturally didn't understand that. Okay, but my counter to Jack though is that early on in football, the first 5 years of football being a sport, you better have played it if you wanted to coach it.
Yeah.
Because who did you draw upon? Nowadays, anyone can coach running because it's been out for 100 years how to be a decent running coach. I think there is some truth that to be a hybrid coach right now, you better have failed hybrid at least once. And then you have to know what the next stage of training feels like after.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You need at least two big training blocks, like in serious blocks.
You can't be doing the OCR slash hybrid. You need to do hybrid. That's how I feel. Yeah. Like you can't, yes, you can appeal to both sides, but like if you really want to know what it feels like, you can't have half-assed your way through a high rock or a hybrid block, whether it's DECA, high rock, something else.
And then you need to know what it feels like once you've addressed your low-hanging fruit, then how do we determine our time? So I do think that this sport, there is some truth to, you have to do it because it's in its infancy. There's no one to draw upon other than the people doing it. So there's truth to that. So, but Rich, do I belong having a hybrid program? I haven't raced pro since 2020.
I like it more than others that are not coaches. And since I know you, I know you're a good coach. I know you know what you're doing from a bunch of different modalities.
Bracken's in it for the money.
He's
that hybrid, way you said it though, means you also like it less than others.
Not well, less than me. Yeah. But
we don't have to dwell on it. It was just we're at an interesting pivotal point in a sports history where it's starting to have been around long enough that the succubus coaches are starting to show up. Like, hey, I can coach you on this. I've never done it.
Yes.
At what point does the general knowledge of the community support a fledgling coach?
So Bracken, you were around in the early days of OCR when, and it seemed like for a while there were some ridiculous programs coming out.
For sure.
It's a ridiculous sport.
Is that the same? Yeah, that's true. Is that the same thing that's going on with hybrid right now?
I don't know. Honestly, at the beginning, if you could just run, you were good at OCR. So I don't know. No one was just good at Hyrox except for people who are already training essentially for it without realizing it. So
like Lauren, I don't know, or Hunter, that's Meg. About it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't think that that necessarily needs to be, I don't know. That is a good question. Cause these CrossFit people could make a good argument that they're like, hey, like we know all the modalities as well. It's like, I did one race, but it's like, there's levels that you need to know of how to prepare for it. Like you said, like going through a couple cycles. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I like it more.
Anyway, I'm announcing Anaheim.
Yeah, let's go.
Return
That's
what to pro. I'm talking about. 12 and a half meter sleds. Rich says I have 10 minutes waiting there. I'm a sub 60 guy. I'm just kidding, guys.
last chance qualifier. BK's headed to freaking Nice. He's going to pop one.
That is not the goal.
That's a possibility, though. We can't rule it out.
I heard it from Rich.
That is not written in the stars.
We can't rule it
out. Hey, you want to know what's really...
Let's go. I love it.
You want to know what's really good news about that? The next day, you guys can go to Big Bear.
It's reversed.
Oh.
Sunday. Sunday. It's a Sunday Super.
Oh, Sunday. Yeah, yeah.
It's a Sunday Super. We could do that.
I'm thinking of being there. Just saying.
I will not.
Yeah.
Okay, let's make the drive.
The only thing worse than an altitude OCR race would be the day after.
You want to bring this full circle? Speaking of David Magida and running back-to-back High Rocks and Big Bear, he tried doing that as a rabbit after World Championships in Las Vegas. His quads did not survive. And yet somehow Chris the next day won World Championships in High Rocks and then got third at Big Bear against a pretty stacked field at the time. So
Bear, yeah,
maybe you can do it, but we know you're not Chris.
No.
So since we are sort of in the, I mean, this can go any direction right now. Let's go with Hyrox, just because that's what we're talking about. We got some other things we can speak on that can.
Yeah, if we're going like international dateline, that happened first, and then everything west of it happened later. So
I like that. Smart. Yeah.
We're going chronologically.
On the men's pro side, Graham Holiday took the W 58-42. Jake Williamson was 60-33. Adam Corlett was 60-48. Florian Gast was 61-05. It's a good showing from Graham here. This course didn't seem to be necessarily favorable or not favorable. It seemed to just be like a fair course. That's a good time on a fair course. He's just outside of the Elite 15 right now. But I would imagine he will catch a roll down. I think he's 17th right now.
Yeah. And so, it was not a clean course. It was massively packed.
Mm.
I don't know how
the registration numbers, like the difference year over year between those two events. It was like,
what was it?
Threefold. It was crazy.
What'd they have?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I remember seeing like before it was 400 in this category. Now it's 1300. Like,
oh, in each category.
Crazy big increases. Yeah.
And this was just a 1 day event, right? They have 2 day events in London, but this was still a 1 day event.
Yeah.
Here.
It is just a wildfire over there right now, just exploding in popularity. But we also had, in my opinion, the greatest athlete to ever try a Hyrox from another sport. I believe he's better in his sport than Ricky Garrard was in his, simply because of time spent doing it and world championships won. So we had Sebastian Kienle come out, which didn't make the waves to the general population that I thought it was going to, but maybe that's just because.
Did he make a big deal about it?
No.
Okay. That's probably why.
Like, who was the guy a couple of months ago who was a high level triathlete who did it?
I'm blanking on
Joe
Skipper.
Joe Skipper. Yes. Okay. But he has like YouTube presence, and he was like, yeah, you know, like he made a couple of things like, yeah, I'm going to try.
He was a legit pro triathlete, but Kienle is a legit world champion.
And he was the Ironman world champion?
World champion.
He won Kona?
I don't know if he won Kona. He won a world championship though.
I mean, Joe went sub seven in an Ironman, right? That's pretty legit.
Oh, he's really good.
70.3. Yeah, he has to have won Kona, but they have a 70.3 world championship and then the full Ironman world championship as well. He is legit. Like in our time, he's a top five of the last 30 years type male triathlete, in my opinion.
Wow.
He is on the modern day Mount Rushmore in long course triathlon, and he came over. And so it wasn't as, I mean, we talked about it in our group chat, but we didn't see like huge. I thought they could have promoted the heck out of it. They didn't, but he did remarkably well for his prior sport experience.
So just a little bit of reference. I got his Wikipedia up. So he was the 2012 70.3 half Ironman world champion. And then he was fourth in Kona, it looks like. So it's very good. And then he won.
That's legit.
He won back to back 70.3. So 12 and 13. Granted, that was over a decade ago, but still.
What's his Ironman PR? He popped something really fast.
It's funny. It actually doesn't say it in his Wikipedia. That should be the first thing. Lead with PRs. Right. Lead with PRs here, Wikipedia. Who's managing this? A goal of 2024 for Wikipedia is to get the Okras up there. That's happening.
I like that.
Yeah.
So anyways, legit world-class athlete.
Yes.
Endurance athlete in multiple modalities, not just running or biking, like really world-class at both and at combining them. And so I think he's the best engine that's ever approached our sport. Granted, past his prime, but fantastic to see that happen.
So Bracken, say that you happen to be there. Would you have wanted him to know your name by the end of the race?
Oh my goodness. I'll never live that down. And I love
never.
It.
So he finished 27th overall, 10th in his age group with a 69-13 in the pro division. You know, it's the normal stuff. His running seemed fine, but it looks like he just couldn't access much via the stations, but just muscular endurance, not ready. Hammered the sled push. Then the sled pull hammered him. He was like 550 on that. 4+ minutes on burpee broad jumps, 4:15 on row, you know, 2 minutes on farmers, and then like almost seven on wall balls, 5 minutes on lunges, and almost
the race got him.
And
yeah,
still sub 70.
Still sub 70. He ran well.
But he showed what a legit world-class athlete can do transferring power-wise, because you can't fake the sled push. Like, there are days, even if you wanted to get it done sub three, it just might not be in the cards. Even if you said, I'm just going to sprint the sledding and quit, some people wouldn't get it done sub three. And what did he push?
251.
Yeah, that's like, that shows potential. It, not that he might care at all, but for an undersized triathlete to come over and push 251 is pretty astounding to me.
I mean, like,
Dylan Scott does it. Like,
anybody
now,
the biggest guy.
You can
push his first one.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
No one's ever felt anything like a Hyrox sled in the sport of triathlon. They've never felt that way before.
And like, you almost can't replicate it in training until you felt it in a race. Mm-hmm. You can't really.
Yeah. Prepare. You just look at the weight and you're like, oh, my carpet's going to be the exact same. It's like,
even if you put like 100 pounds more than the weight, you're like, got it.
And maybe it worked.
Like,
maybe
and it feels
didn't.
Like twice as heavy on the day. So that was good. That was a good point. And we're seeing more athletes, especially high-end European athletes, jump into these events, which is great. Which is good to see. I don't know if they're doing more outreach or if it's just people that are in their ear a little bit more. Be like, hey, look, this multi-domain endurance event. Like, you should be good at this. But it might be too short. Might be too short for these guys.
It's also true.
Speaking of high level runner, Anas 358 miler, he definitely is in touch with some pretty high level athletes. And he told me last year that there are some very high level runners who are interested in DECA and Hyrox who are currently in college or in a pro running career, but they know about it. And when it's time, they're going to jump over.
And that's the way to transition. Like, Anas was a 358 miler, but he changed sports, changed lifestyle, changed his body.
Took 7 years.
7 years, pretty much doubled his body size, and then came back to building the engine. And so talent doesn't go away, but your skill set changes rapidly when your body changes rapidly. So he's still a very good runner, but like, these guys are current 350-some milers who would be building off of that. Had he started right out of college, he would have instantly, within 6 months, been a DECA World contender.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, that's always going to be like, oh, the what if. I mean, that was in our what ifs, wasn't it? And but like, it's the mindset piece and the wanting to train for this is really the biggest part. Like, if any of these athletes wanted to train the way that they've trained to get to the Olympic trials or whatever their goal was, get to the national championship and NCAAs, like, then yeah, for sure. But they come out of it and they probably think they're going to clean everyone's clock, and you can't.
Yeah.
You can't. And like, oh, shit, I got to work just as hard to do this. I don't want to do that.
My point was a follow-up on Bracken saying, like, the best engine we've seen. I'm saying there will be more and more people, like, not necessarily on his level, but very close, like, world-level athletes coming.
Yeah, we're seeing it.
And for, like, a decade, I've been saying there's people that can replace us out there. They just don't care. Mm-hmm. However, it's not all of them. And what Rich is saying is right. We've all been on college teams, and we've all gone to the weight room and seen about like 20 cross country guys all try a pull up. Some of them just can't do it, and some can do like 12.
Right.
That's the one. He could train. Like, there are people that just can drive power and some that can't. There's some people who can move cross laterally and some that just can't. Engine alone isn't enough. You can come over with a 13-minute 5K, and it doesn't mean you'll ever be good at the ski erg.
For sure.
But some of them will be outstanding on it.
This is also something that popped up in our group text. I think it was a Magida point. Lots of Magida references.
Yeah,
up the
he's
jump.
Doing his thing.
He's fucking just throwing out opinions.
Stirring the pot.
And stirring the pot. He said that CrossFitters do better than triathletes with no training specifically for Hyrox. And that seems to be the case. It seems to be like the strength and being able to kind of move in and out at a more rapid pace. Even though for a CrossFitter, it's like a long transition.
You can coast a run.
You can coast a run.
You can't coast the stations.
Mm-mm.
And that's why.
And they can do that. That's what they would approach and do it.
Let's say you do 6-minute mile if you're the fast guy, and then 7-minute mile if you're a decent runner who's a CrossFitter. So you've got a 5-minute spread over those five miles. It could take you 5 minutes extra on the sled pull alone.
Right.
Never mind wall balls. Never mind everything else. So yes, it makes sense. CrossFitters going in blind are going to be better. Even if they're running 7:30 miles, now you're 7.5 minutes of difference right there. You can lose that in two stations very quickly against someone who's not experienced.
However, what if you took, let's say, a former world champion CrossFitter and turned him into a sub 210 marathoner. Now.
And now it's lights out. Now we're cooking. 48, 46 for a full high rocks?
With the right coach, I don't see why he couldn't pop a 39.
Easy. That's like
same coach would have to do it though.
Along those same lines, Christy Aramo O'Connell, she said she's going to do Houston or do two high rocks in the spring. So I think Houston.
I like that she's doing two.
Two makes sense.
Two is if you do one, you might as well do two.
And this is kind of the formula. I was thinking on the men's side, like if we saw who would the best high end CrossFitter would be at high rocks, it's probably Ricky. Maybe some of these other guys, maybe like a Yella Hosta or a Jeff Adler or people who are like pretty good at the runs. But like Ricky is pretty good at all that stuff and can sit and suffer. And he was like,
I saw Josh Wittrup from Germany, right? He gave it a go for a little while.
I don't know.
He was a games athlete a few times. And I think he was like 60, 61 Germany.
But these big dudes, it's like hard for them to match the running. We're on the women's side, we see these athletes come in, maybe not as muscular as some of the men are comparatively, but Christy Aramo has run like 3:0 in the marathon.
3:04 PR.
Yeah. Right? So you would think like, oh, someone
that's the combo.
Which would be the equivalent of what for on the men's side? 235? 240?
235, yeah.
Yeah, right?
And that's like, correct. Yeah, I'd say 240.
No CrossFitter is running 240 in a marathon.
Someone's running a 210. Yeah.
Someone can run 210.
Yeah, but no 240.
No 240. No 240 though.
Yeah. I would agree. It's not even close.
So what's her debut going to be, basically? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, how do you think she's going to do?
You know what I've gotten to the point of? Not even caring about debuts. Like, give me a 6-minute window and show me your front end to second half splits, and that's how I'll judge it. I want your second race. Because what's she going to do prior? Like, if she hooks up with Meg or someone, is like, can I just like do a 3-week camp with you or 2-week camp or like a 4-day camp and then go home and run my training? Then she's probably going to debut close to 60, like 62 or 64 or something. But if she doesn't, she might run a 70 and it might be really positive. She does great for four stations and cracks.
Who's going to be there that we are aware of on the women's side?
Houston?
Like, is it going to be her pushing it on her own? Because this is kind of in between two majors. I imagine that most people are probably just going to want to stay in a training block, sharpen it rather than doing the Houston in the middle of it.
I mean, you could see someone like Chris doing it, right? Like someone who like will just run Houston. It. Like for
Alex.
Yeah, someone like that. Like, yeah, somebody new, someone who's still like kind of like a Katie Simonson, right? Who's like kind of in the middle, is going to take an opportunity when she has it. It's like not really going to need to put a full focus on like worlds, but it's a local race, right? I don't know. Like, it'll probably be one in 65 to 67.
Vivian lives in Austin, so maybe she could show up.
Like, Viv could jump in if she wanted to. Like, she doesn't need to because she'll have been doing DC and she could be qualified by then. But
and no money. That's
no money.
If you put $500 on it, they'll all show up. Why not?
Right. So there's probably not going to be a ton of competition. But I mean, I think that's probably better for someone's first time so they don't get pulled out. I think between 60, I think 65 and 67.
I think someone pops a 64.
My guy was 65.
It's just like, it's the same thing as the high end collegiate athlete who put everything into getting to their goal. Like, she did that for years getting to the CrossFit Games. Like, you think she's going to be putting in the same type of effort that she put in to be the type of athlete that she has become for this High Rocks race?
We saw Sam Briggs, who was known as probably the best runner in the female field at CrossFit Games for a while. Yeah, she got dead last.
Like, yeah, we caught Briggs late.
I know, but she was still a good runner at that time.
But Christy Ramos, a retired CrossFitter.
I also was answering the wrong question. I thought you were predicting the winning time in Houston.
Oh, no. That would be a hell of a segment. Let's predict the winning times for the rest of the High Rocks races that haven't happened for the...
Well, we were talking about who might show up and what it might take to win. I was glancing at new shoes behind me. I'm distracted. Anyway, 65 to 70, it's all positive.
Yeah, it's just like, how much is she going to... If she wants to be good at this, I think she could. But is it just to get in front of a brand new sport and like help her brand? And like, you know, a couple weeks later, there'll be a High Rocks program that she's selling. So
conspiracy theory. What happens if they're like, oh crap, Christy's showing up. We got to make this a fast course. She goes up, just dominates. Now she's selling programs because she's the record holder. All this exposure, and everyone's sitting on the sidelines like, oh, there was a US course right in front of me that was super fast, and I decided not to go to it.
It wouldn't matter for this year because it's after the all the majors.
Oh, yeah, time wise,
you're
right.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, that would only help her for the last chance seed.
And not even, yeah, right. Like,
yeah.
The good news is that between Hunter, Meg, Lauren, those type of athletes, the top end is so good in experience that no matter how fast the course was, a new person couldn't set the record because they just couldn't pace it correctly yet.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have the new one. Even if they had the engine to do it in like their second or third, your first one, there's just so many pieces to get right without tipping.
Right. To push as fast as you possibly can without completely dying after. Right.
Like, you just don't know your line.
On
eight stations yet.
Yeah. And we saw Rylan in LA. That was a pretty slow course. You were there, Rich. And then I think he did Valencia, Spain, because he was heading over to Europe for something for
Trifecta. He did Houston.
Yeah. And then
two tough shots at it.
He really had his breakthrough in Chicago. But I feel like he raced the same exact style every single time. It just experience helped, and he learned how to deal with it a little bit better. So maybe, you know, give her 3-4 races, she could be a freak and just pop a really good race and get in that elite 15. But it'd be very impressive if she pulled it off in this first race.
If she wants to. On the women's end over at Manchester, Kate Davey popped a really good one, 64.09.
She's a good runner.
There's a discrepancy with that time. I don't know what's going on with that time. Not the seconds, like the 10. There is like her time shows up different places. We'll cover it in a minute. Jade Skillen had a great race, 64.45. Zara, Pergiani was 70.06. Kind of a rough go for her on her end. But Kate Davey pushes her way into the Elite 15, I believe, or she's right outside of it. She's now 17th, bumps Chris back to 18th. Yeah, on this list, like 2 days ago, Kate Davey was listed as a 64.19. And I believe that's what the clock said when she finished. But now she's a 64.09. Yeah, and it moved and it jumped her from 20th to 17th, like those 10 seconds.
Couple roll downs. She's definitely benefiting as opposed to getting on the wrong side of it.
You would imagine she's going to get in. I'm not actually sure who's all coming, but there's going to be at least one roll down that I know of. Maybe two. So it could be big. Could be big there. But that's a great race for her. She really popped one. She's been racing often and seeing her really get a good time here and put her in that Elite 15 is solid.
There seems to be about a 3.5 to 4 minute spread men to women is how I kind of look at it. Like a 64.0 feels like a 58 mid for guys. We're like, that's legit. That's fast. And it's going to put you right on the edge. We just saw, what's his name? Graham run 58 mid and put him to 17th, right?
Yeah, that's interesting because Graham was fifth at the Worlds last year.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily put, it's not outside of the realm of possibility that Kate Davey would get that, but it would be a stretch.
And Graham has like a 56 something PR from some race last year also, right? But I think the fifth at World is the more telling result.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to draw lines from men to women yet in terms of times. Like if it's all kind of like if the top are just outliers and the rest are kind of filling in the middle. I'm not sure yet. Jack can run some numbers. They could be wrong. Then you could ignore it.
You run some numbers. Yeah.
This
is not intended to be a shot at anyone who's taken fifth place at World Championships. However, placing in the top 10 at Worlds, I don't believe means the same as running several fast times and vice versa. It shows that you can race a championship race or maybe that you ran the smartest race. Like that 4th through 8th position can oftentimes be someone that was just running in the second pack and caught people who cracked or someone that just popped that day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that position has historically shown that it takes another half year before they pop another fast time like that.
Hmm.
So I don't know what it means for Graham. Like he took 5th and he earned 5th best in the world that day. But if you run that race again this year, is he the odds on favorite for 5th or not? I'm not entirely sure, but someone who takes third that year, people will vote heavily for them to be top three again the next year. Mm. That mid-range position, there's just so much shuffling that happens that it's hard to say what it means. And Rich, you did it. And Dylan's done near that. And David, like, we've had a bunch of people do it who are obviously really, really good at the sport. But I'm not ever sure what a championship like fourth through eighth means.
And just Graham's race, he did kind of put himself in the lead pack and just kind of hung on.
Yes,
kind of like what Paleo did in Chicago. So like that race, it wasn't necessarily like he could have finished. He wasn't too far behind Kent, really.
No.
But to me, looking at the world championships over the way that if this progresses, the way that it, if it continues to create the fields that it's created in the past, this like system, it might not be all the right guys. Like, I know I'm saying because I wasn't in the race last year. So I'm like, well, I wasn't there. So couldn't be all the right guys, but people are going to get left out. And then the men's side from fifth to 30th seems to be a crapshoot.
Yep.
You know? So it's just a matter of who's in the race kind of.
But all that to say, he took care of business, won his race, ran a time that should be able to roll him down in. And I'm happy for him for that.
His time, his roll down time is going to be from.
That's true.
10 months ago. Yeah. But still, like if he caught that, whatever. He's probably
in. But he proves he has fitness now.
Yeah, he's in as good a form that he would be in. Want to talk about doubles?
Mm-hmm.
Who else? Or you mentioned Zara was behind Kate Davey. I was just wondering who.
Yeah, and that was quite a few minutes off of her PR.
Because she's raced in one of the majors so far, or maybe
both of them. She was just outside. I think she finished sixth or seventh at Stockholm, so she had a good race there. So she's like one of the next people that would be able to qualify at a major. Mm-hmm. Like if it was like gotcha. who else could qualify here? It'd be like Camilla, Alina. Zara, probably. All right. Doubles. This is the debut of the pro doubles. Question. Is this a category of race that we needed here at Hyrox?
You guys know where I stand.
I don't.
Team races are a blast when you're there, but I don't know what they add to the sport.
I love team races. I think they should be there. And I think it's about time. If you're going to split up the work and you already have an established pro division, why not use that weight?
Yeah. The weight move was overdue. Meg and I talked about it on that little broadcast we did for Hunter. It is the right move. It was long overdue. It ensures that pro athletes will now do this. In the past, like one or two would do it per 3 months and they would just get an easy win. Now, like the pros will try it because this is our challenge.
Not it's like an opportunity.
Our meaning them.
It's like an opportunity though. Like that's what kept people from, at least in the States, from doing doubles in the past. Like, okay, we have four races all year that we can run, have to all be individual. But I kind of like that they moved it to pro. I mean, it makes more sense if you are an athlete who is kind of on the line, who is done open and you're not sure what the pro is going to feel like. You don't have to just like jump into the deep end and hope you can swim.
Trade off.
You can test it out. You'd be like, okay, I felt that sled. I know what I'm kind of in for. I need to put in a little bit more work, or like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm good to go for the next pro race I can do on my own. So I kind of like it. But they're keeping the regular doubles too,
which they should.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a reason there is a pro wave and the majority of people do not do it. So yeah, keep regular doubles. But I think that the glory of doubles should go towards this new pro eight at this point forward.
Except the old record.
I was going to say records though. A lot of people tried and no one.
I think we
got to
scrub it.
No,
we got to write it in stone.
Bracken, yeah, what's your three-man shuttle hurdle relay or whatever?
Yeah.
That thing's not getting scrubbed.
The four, now triple jump, four-man relay.
Yeah, triple four triple jump.
You talk about goofy games.
Is that for time or is it for distance? What are we talking about?
It's not even a relay. It's just you add up your four best on the day.
You should just like to be two pits on either side. Someone jumps and then you start running.
Same time. You tag them in the air.
It's not for time. It's a combination of time and distance.
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
some sort
it's
of like
it's the pump and run. Or what's, yeah. Jack, what do we do? The spelling? The nerd pump and run?
Yeah.
The nerd pump
and run. 10K.
This one I fit in after the mile. Before the 2 mile.
Yeah. No, I
wouldn't have been the 2 mile that day.
I don't think that you should scrub the records, the one that Rich has, because like a lot of people have gone after it, and it's just, it's what it is.
It's never going to get broken.
No. It's like the old javelin and the new javelin. You have two different metrics that you measure it by.
There are athletes who could race in pro who opt to do fast open weight, so maybe they can get together and do something.
But they won't beat you in Pilates.
I don't think they will either.
Like a Kent and a Hunter, or someone who decides, or Kent and Sandy, to say,
nope,
we're going to drop down only to spite Rich. They would be the only type that would have a shot at it.
And then they would just waste an effort and come up short. And then be like, man.
Yeah, because...
Who would be the most likely to do it?
I'm on the team, whatever it is.
No, to try to spite you with like Megita and Kent listen to this and be like, let's get him.
Good luck.
Yeah. Good who's going to outrun you two and out high-end work you?
It's Stan.
It has to be Rylan. Yeah. Like a Rylan and Hunter. Yeah, I'm sure Kent and Hunter would do good, do fine.
There's people that could. There's no, like Hunter and whoever were going to break the pro weight record.
Yes.
They were going to. That conversation will never happen about your record. There are people that could maybe, but there's no one who shows up guaranteed to do it. And then, like you said, it's a waste of an effort.
After Hunter and an ass like came up just short. Now it's like, okay, we actually might need to train. You'd have to like train for it probably, you know? But so Hunter and Michael Sandbatch end up with a new world record. This race has only been run once before at the World Championships. So it wasn't a huge lineage of times here that we had to, that they had to like break through. So they run 50:18. The old record was 55 something, right? The old record was slow.
Yeah, it was 54 something, Colin and Taylor Haney.
Slower than Hunter's individual world record. So like we got the world record that we expected here. What I'm interested in is how this pro weight is now going to affect the times of across the board. Because the going open to pro seems to add 5 minutes for an individual, roughly, you know, relatively speaking. But I'm not sure how much is really going to add to doubles. So you guys want to look at these splits?
I do. One thing that jumped off the screen at me was transitions were less frantic with pro weight. The lighter open weight, people are thrashing themselves to get back at it. And with pro, like you could tell they didn't mind a breather.
Let's take a minute to get to build up.
Yeah, they weren't like leaping ahead of each other on stations. They were just managing that.
There are still three stations, the ski erg, the row, and burpee broad jumps that are the same for either. So it's five of the eight that are going to have a change realistically.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we have Sandy and Hunter's splits here on the left and Hunter.
301. That's for opening K.
Guessing that's short. I'm guessing that's short. And then we have Hunter and Anas on the right. So the run times are
2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, was it?
LA. So that was mid-December.
Okay. So basically my point is probably similar fitness for Hunter.
Yeah.
Cross.
Jack, look at the second split. You want a fast split? Look at the second split.
Three.
For Anas and Hunter.
Oh. Man. It's moving.
There's a legit 3-0.
Yeah, that probably is honestly 309.
So these courses are different, right? Where LA had a long first run and then the rest of the runs were short. The Manchester course looked like the first run was short. The rest were long. But man, they came out and hammered that ski. 313 on the ski.
That's disgusting.
Did you watch it?
No.
Hunter had the ski going like this. He was lifting the back on every single pull. I've never seen anything like that in a competition outside of like an interval session.
What are 313s? What's a 313 for?
136, including transition time.
Wow.
That's
Hunter cool, had to have been pulling in the 20s by the looks of how it was flexing up top.
So they went after it for that first part.
Totally worth it in the first 6 minutes.
Right. Their sled push. And these runs, it's unfortunate. These aren't going to line up almost at all.
What's the total runtime plus transitions for each of them?
Luckily, we don't have that for Manchester.
All right, great. I'll get that time calculator. I just need to see it on the left.
From sled push, added 18 seconds. Sled pull, it added quite a bit.
Yeah, you can't hand over hand the same way.
Were they
That's
doing
where it?
It
really gets you.
And they were doing it like how they would do individual, walking the back.
Yeah. Fast, but yes.
28-25
ranked in LA.
28-25 run split for Hunter and Michael this past weekend.
28-25?
Yep.
Counting rocks?
They don't have a rock zone split there. So,
so baked in.
Only adding their 301,
so 330. No, that would be without. Well, do you want to add up their stations real quick?
Yeah. Just keep talking. I'll figure it out.
No problem. The fast forwards. Tell me more. The burpee broad jumps. About the same. I was surprised how fast they were actually on this. I was looking at plyo in my splits, and that was about 10 seconds faster than what we did, which I thought was crazy. And then the row.
Although we have to say it. Hunter won't like me saying this, but he knows I love him. They were not held to any sort of form standards.
The Hunter
hop? They were able to slide their hands forward. And Sandy got to do it significantly.
Really?
He may have put it forward more than Hunter. So that, I think, was a big factor because they were able to go faster than in LA, just form-wise.
I'm just going to throw this out there. When I did the relay, I smoked that time solo, okay? World record, me. The row is very fast. They're good on the ergs. Because this kind of is where it was falling apart for them, I think, for Anas and Hunter. But they must have been taking their time on the runs, or at least pulling it back a little bit.
Sandy had a big second half. In the first half, Hunter was gapping him on runs. And interestingly, Sandy finished most of the stations.
Really?
Yeah. And I asked them about it afterwards, and I don't think Hunter could hear me well, and he answered a different question. But
he's like, shut up,
in
nerd.
The second half, yeah. Sandy was right on his shoulder on every run. And then Hunter said, and on the stream, Sandy's cadence was high on the rower. And Hunter afterwards, he's like, he said, Mike got on there. And he wouldn't have said Michael. Probably said Michelle got on there. And he said, and he was pulling in the 20s right off the bat. And no one has ever done that but me. And that's when I knew. So Sandy went after the row.
Nice. Yeah, because that's a fast split. Yeah. Farmers is just about as fast. They didn't lose much time there. 3 seconds difference. And like you figure if you're just doing 100 meters with even with the heavyweights, it might not change it that much. Lunges were exactly the same. And then wall balls were like the same too.
So if you want their splits, they were 50-18 for their total. Is that correct?
50-18, yes, I believe.
Yes. Okay. So that means they had a 309 rock zone because they had 18-44 for the workout zones, 28-25 for the runs, and then 309 for the rock zone.
So it did slow their running quite a bit.
Yeah. So 28-25 plus 309. So you're 31-34 for your total run time, including the rock zones. So 31-34. And it looks like Anas and Hunter were 30-11. So like 90 seconds difference.
The other thing we never know is that this was partial grid, partial not. We don't know what the total distance is on those type of courses.
What was partial grid?
Like they were gridded, but they weren't on the grid for burpees or lunges or farmer's carry.
Like a regular course though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were grid for part of it and not grid for others.
What? What do you mean?
It's like the machines look like they were right on the side of the grid. It was like a compact normal structure. Like the normal race compacted together, but then lunges and farmer's carry were off a ways.
Okay.
So not like Chicago, but like
no
combination between Chicago and a normal non-grid course.
Okay, gotcha.
So we don't know what the total. They shoot for a rough total, but we don't know what the total was.
They're okay about getting it like fairly close, you know. So yeah, 90 seconds difference on just the run, you said, Jack? With rock zone? Okay. Yeah. So that's interesting. Because, I mean, these stations I mean, they clearly went after the stations really hard. But I guess we'll see how it like when these really high end doubles teams do take on the pro weight, seeing how that changes things. Because these two might just be two of the best at the stations, and they're like, let's just dump it out and see what we got on the runs. Because they had one that fell apart. It looks like after Farmer's Carry, it kind of fell apart on them.
And yeah, lunges, that's interesting.
And that last run was long, probably?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've got a question for you guys. I'm looking at the, you know, time of day, all that on the left side, on the right side of the left side. So basically the Michael and Hunter split. So if you look at rocks in 301, that means they went over this timing mat on their run at 301. And then it took 4 seconds to go from that timing mat to what?
To the start, to the mat.
Sled timing mat. But there's no mat necessarily at each ski. It's just like entering the ski.
When you get to the station.
But then they're 312. What does that stand for?
Oh, it only took them 1 second to get out of the station.
So they ran to the farthest one.
And then
what's the 21 stand for then?
How long it took them to get out from the skier.
Back onto the course?
To the course.
But I guess what I'm saying is like 312, 313 is probably just a rounding error for what their workout result is on the left. Like, is that 312 what would be on the display, or would it be slightly faster?
That's between the two mats. Between the end mat. So like what they skied was actually faster than this.
That's what I just wanted to make sure. So yeah, they were probably like 305 or something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, if it took them 5 seconds. So yeah, they're closer to.
Yeah.
It's probably 5 seconds. I wonder what the average is, because sometimes that can factor in. This is something Mogita, our guy, third mention, he brought this up like the first time he raced in London. And he's like, dude, the course is so massive that it took like 10 seconds to get into a ski zone, then all the way to where you needed to go. So that is something that also factors into these courses and the times that I think that I'm not sure they account for. They might. But so if it's a shorter zone, right? Like say it's like one is like to just have it all on the north side of the convention hall, and they just have one long stretch of ski ergs, and the other is like there's north and south, so it's tighter, same amount of ski ergs, but the zones
are
smaller.
Saving that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if they account for that.
What would you do then?
That was kind of my point on this. Like, are we ever going to be able to get duplicates unless they make those specifically? Yeah, because we already know there are enough issues there, but it's like what did those splits actually reveal? We're doing this breakdown, but it's like at the end of the day, the layout, you just might have a long zone in between there that's not really being accounted for.
That's where the template comes in, a roundabout template.
Put that roundabout, put it in there, Jack.
Roundabout.
So world record on their end. Congrats to them. It's going to be fun to see other athletes kind of go after this.
Have a high-level women's team? Have they gone after it yet?
I don't believe.
This was the only opportunity.
This has been the only opportunity.
Well, Worlds,
so far.
Right?
Worlds last year, but, and I don't know who won that. Let's look that up, actually.
Yeah. That's kind of what I wasn't sure about.
So this is Sam Bilby is a very strong athlete. She did something one time where it was like she broke the open record and then jumped into a pro race like the next weekend and like ran like 65 or something. She's like very good, but I think she's in the 40 to 49
group right there.
Jeez.
Yeah. But they take the average. I don't know what that means. But she's in somewhere 40 plus. So she's very good. And 59 is a pretty good time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we find this for what won the world championships last year. Doubles, women. Look at me cooking. I'm cooking.
It's automatic. Oh, that's a good team.
So yeah, wow.
Miriam came back and raced?
That's true.
So how fast were...
Didn't she hobble off the course day one?
Miriam was not in good form during Worlds last year. I thought she may have finished. She may not have. I don't know. But Rebecca Nather, she was at Maastricht and she ran, 64 something.
Emmy Cross bringing in fifth place.
Let's go.
She beat Linda
but this
Blair.
This is a good team. Linda Blair from The Exorcist. Yeah. So
that 59 is pretty solid.
That's a really good time. That, so I guess that's also the world record?
I guess so.
People made no big deal about it. You know why?
No mention.
No sheriff in there.
And it's under an hour, so that's like a very easy, hey, first team to break it out, even if it's only happened twice. Like, that's still an easy thing to call out.
Right. Sam Bilby didn't produce a watch along. She screwed up. I would have commentated on that if asked. All right. So anything else to add about Manchester?
No.
Absolutely not. Great job.
One thing, it means we may not know Sandy as an athlete. He may be a DECA monster. He may be a fast twitch, high rev type of guy, which would explain some of his late race faltering in the past. Mm-hmm. He may be a Rylan Rich more than he is a grinded out Dylan or Magida kind of guy.
I think that's fair. He's a footballer. So, I mean, there's got to be some fast twitch in there.
And this was a 50-minute race, not a 56-minute race. So that those 6-7 minutes might have made the whole difference.
I'm happy with a 50-minute versus a 60.
And I don't care what you did. Getting onto the row and starting to pull 120s, you don't do that unless you have the option to.
Strange he was finishing them, though. Like, I mean, that seems just like...
Yeah, very. The problem is no one can run with Hunter once they're tired, and they set him up to come off.
So he should be tired. He should be gone. So, second.
Yeah. I don't know.
How did they do wall balls? Did they do just split them?
It was like 30 or 40, and then Hunter took over and took it in.
Oh, okay. Got it.
313. That's had to have taken minimal breaks.
Allowed, he threw it up, let it fall. Hunter came in, scooped it off the ground, and went. It wasn't like the hand walk around.
He wasn't under the rig?
He was under the rig, but like, he just dropped it. Whereas Jack and I tried that, and they made us pick it back up it to the partner under the rig and then walk out. It was funky.
Is that how you're supposed to do it?
That's not the way the rule book reads.
No.
But
we were like, all right, let's just play by the rules. Just do what they tell us. I
don't want to ruffle any feathers.
My take on Sandy starting or Hunter starting everything is that he just didn't relinquish the lead ever and charged into the station and was there and just started it. Like, he was just accelerating through every rock zone, and Sandy wasn't able to start off.
He needed that. He needed that break, and then he just hung on. Then when they started, he was just like, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which makes it even more impressive to me that he hung on to the second half of the runs.
Absolutely. That's not a fun way to do it. We had a Spartan race. All right, actually, we got a little interlude here. We had an absolute legendary race happen out in Wisconsin.
Oh, man.
Abominable snow race. This is actually a pretty cool race. It's been going on for a couple of years now.
Like 7 or something.
7 years.
Maybe more.
There was one point where I used this as a data point about who's going to do well in Jacksonville. That's how important this race is for the National Series for Spartan.
It's like Wadapalooza for Wadapalooza for OCR.
Yep.
Marquez Green is going to be a monster this year.
We had someone on site for Race Brain. We had a correspondent out there. Bracken Crocker, tell us how it went.
It was one of the physically most demanding races I've ever done in my life. Because that area got 14 inches of snow over the previous week and a half. And then the final half week coming in had 3 days of rain. And so it compacted the snow into that really, really dense packing snow, or like 5 to 8 inches of slush in places. So it wasn't like powder you could run through. It wasn't icy that you could grip. It was just every step was really costly. And they had 6 rigs on course. And I would put these at 6. Savage / OCR Worlds. At least 3 of them were legit rigs. And it was like 34, 35 in drizzling at the start. So it was just like metal rigs, soaking wet ropes. They had a low rig. Like, it was challenging. This was the most challenging grip race I've run since Battle Frog.
How'd you do?
Granted, I haven't been
really.
I haven't done. I would say this was harder than the OCR Worlds 3K course I did. A few,
the cold factor into that?
Like, for sure.
Okay.
Were you they even like, had things like Weaver, but thick logs. So you couldn't like, it wasn't like the that 6-inch diameter log. They were like 8 to 10-inch, 12-inch logs, and they're wet. So everything was like, everything hurt you. You had to just like, there's no swinging through anything. You just had to clench. So I got through everything. It was mandatory obstacle completion. I fell off one rope rig and got back on.
Like Tarzan swingy type of rig?
Yeah, it was like 8 ropes across, but long ropes.
Uh-huh.
I wrapped my foot on one that I thought was the next one. It was the last one.
Oh, jeez.
The previous one. So I went to reach and there wasn't, I didn't have a, I just felt, it was so wet. Like you grabbed it. If you grabbed 2-hand, your bottom hand got wet because the top one was like wringing water out of the.
Oh my God.
It was really wet.
Did you wear like Packers receivers gloves? Hit it like that?
Under Armour. This is our house.
That's right.
Now, receiver gloves wouldn't do a thing in that.
What'd you wear? Leg mitts?
No, I wore like full rubberized, like fishing boat gloves, that like work gloves that are all rubber. So like more waterproof.
Like a dish glove?
Like a dish glove, but tight.
Nice.
And I ended up taking them on and off.
Huh.
Like you couldn't tell what was better.
Well, the results here, Marquez Green, 64-20, Bracken Crocker, 64-26.
Yeah.
And then Mark Robinson, 65-22. So you were there. Were you leading the thing?
No. He has a twin brother who took fourth. They went out and just blasted out.
And we've seen them in Savage do well, win Savage.
He podiumed at one of them. May have local or won a local one, but I thought he was on the podium one time with Sean Roberts. And
they're very good. And they have Ninja Warrior background.
Ninja stuff, yeah.
So I was like, I was down. I worked my way back up into it. And then on the low rig, probably lost 40 seconds to him. Came off about a minute back. And it just stayed at a minute for a long time until I fell off the ropes. And then by the end of that, the nonsense shaking back out, it was closer to 2. And then he got lost off course.
Nah, no, he didn't.
He came out of the woods behind me.
So maybe you got lost.
And he had been like thrashing around in deep snow. We were in a ravine area. So he was going up and down like 12 inches of slush ravine, just wearing himself out. So he came out and I was like, listen, there's less than a mile to go. You had a 2-minute lead, probably. Like, you're good. And he's like, and so we ran and talked the last mile. And then on the last obstacle, just kind of like he moved ahead and went across the line. But he had me handily beat.
Okay.
What would you have done in that situation if he fell off that last one and you're just like standing there? Like,
oh, I would have crossed then, because then it's like he lost 2 minutes, he gave it back, whatever.
Yeah.
On the women's side,
but that kind of stuff has happened before to everyone. Like something weird happens and you just like, you understand when you've lost and when you haven't.
Yeah.
Still not bad. Still pretty solid.
No, I was happy to get through all the rigs. I don't do any grip training other than like weighted pull-ups.
Were you 90?
And again, it was cold. It was wet. I had no ability to swing. My traps and lats are so sore from just like, it was crush grip the whole way through.
Yeah.
God, that sounds so miserable. Good for you for signing up.
It was my first low rig.
That's something. Low rig too?
Dang. Yeah, it was like a bar to a ring, to a rope, to an anchor, to a ring. Like it was.
Did you do a figure four?
No, because I couldn't grip hard enough to do a figure four.
Okay.
Because your hands aren't, you're like hands and knees trying to crawl up some of the hills in the snow. So my hands were numb-ish. So it was really disconcerting to have to do really challenging obstacles, which generally aren't my jam, with really cold, wet hands. So I was truly thrilled just to get through every obstacle.
On the women's side, Sarah Tucker took the W. Vivian Tran was second. Darcy Bates third. So this is a good turnout for the women's side too. I mean, Sarah Tucker has been a player for the past like year and a half. She was, I think, sixth at WTM. She had a really good showing there. And Vivian was, she won her age group last year by a ton. So these are good athletes who showed up for this, who are not from Wisconsin.
Which is kind of cool. Marquette Shoemate showed up.
Oh, for real?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Met him in the parking lot.
That's awesome.
After I got good done. Guy.
How did you do?
Up the Port-a-John. I'm not sure. I left early because I had to get home. Mir had a basketball game, and prior to that, I was doing Hunter's little broadcast, and so I left early and proceeded to lose the transmission in our vehicle. It stopped functioning like 2 miles later.
The van? Ended up
being there for hours. Yeah, in the van. Just
no.
Within like 2 miles, it went from, huh, something feels weird to it's not moving on the side of the road.
Damn.
So it wasn't a great. I got beat and then I lost my vehicle.
Yeah, it's a hard Saturday.
But I've done that race four or five times now. This was head and shoulders above the rest in terms of like production values. They've taken it up a notch with obstacles and everything. They did a really good job.
Snow every year?
No.
Oh.
Two of the years, they got a big melt beforehand.
Gotcha.
It's either been like a foot plus or none.
Let's move along. BK, congrats. Podium streak.
You're back.
No.
Not a Spartans podium.
Dude's been smoking it though. Last two races, first and second.
Yeah, Logan wasn't there, so I couldn't dig deep, you know?
First, second, and second, if you count the...
The Chicago
doubles.
Mm-hmm. One and a half. He got first, one and a half, and second. Like,
I don't know just what that kidding.
Means. One and a half.
Oh, no. Like, we finished first, but finished second, yeah. Which is fantastic transition, because sending off waves at different times is what happened in SoCal Spartan.
Jack is a professional here. Less
you know that was
go.
Good.
Yeah. Double echo in your ears.
Here not anymore. 10 minutes later.
So this is the first Spartan race that we've had in 2024.
In the U.S. Three in Europe already.
Did they have the same rules?
They're doing the competitive style thing. But the thing about the three in, so the U.S. it was in SoCal, bare, you know, just very, very dry. The other three are winter races where they're held on ski resorts, which they used to have Greek Peak in New York in the US. Since then they don't have any in the winter. I would love to run one of those type of races. It's a shame that they don't
abominable
exist anymore.
Snow race. We just talked about
you didn't want it with Brian Gawiski and Greek Peak back in the day.
Josh, well, that's why I asked too. Bracken, was there snow every year? And he said only half the year. So you can guarantee it's going to be half. At a ski resort. Okay. 60% of the years.
That's right.
60% of the time it works every time.
Yeah.
So could someone explain what the differences are in terms of the starting corrals for Spartan this season from years past?
In theory, what the announcement was is that there's no assigned age group times anymore. It's just all competitive, but the first race is still the pro wave. But all the others count as part of the same like roll down age group podium type deal.
But you can win out of the second heat, right?
But apparently you can win out of the second heat, which Anthony Kunkel did.
And then
I was hearing rumors that on Sunday, people were waiting in for wave two in order to try to chase down wave one.
What?
It made it seem like there was a decision you could make, like you had an option. So I'm unsure how they're actually implementing.
I'm trying to find their post where they went into detail about it, because they have like five different waves that they allow you in, and I thought it was more of a mandatory, like, here's what you're going to be.
That's so opposite. So opposite of what it used to be, right? People would pay to get into that first heat.
Yeah. All it's showing is that people are still trying to game the system to try to walk home with.
But it's all. But it's also not very organized.
Again, this is all hearsay.
That's what I kind of heard something similar. It was kind of like, well, my heat was here, but a bunch of people were just jumping in the other one. And yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so right here it says heat seating. There are five pace groups. So you have a pro band and then pace groups 1 through 5 and then open races after that. So in theory, you will have 6 competitive heats, and those are likely the ones that are getting lumped together in the results. The pro band... in the racers who have earned a pro band in the past will have priority access to the front of the start line. All other racers will be seated into pace groups 1 to 5 based on projected finish time, which I'm assuming you fill in on your own when you sign up for a race. Groups are released in groups of 20 to 30 on a rolling basis until all competitive racers are on the course, approximately 7 o'clock to 7:30 a.m. on race day. So that's what it sounds like. And it didn't seem like there was too much structure for groups 2, 3, 4, 5. I imagine most people are going to, if you're faster, you've run enough court races, you probably want to be in groups 1 or 2 realistically, just so you don't get to that bottleneck if you're trying to go for a podium. That would be my guess. I don't know if they're going to be like, all right, we're going to take the old 30, if you were between 25 and 39, in the old system, you're going to be in heat one, and then heat two is 40 to 45, and
supposed to be all potential time based.
Yeah, I think it's honor system when you sign up at that point.
I think they ask either 5K or 10K guesstimate time. What it doesn't say in the rules, it says you have priority access. It doesn't say if once you have your pro band, you must use it. You might not sign up or not wear your pro band, but like, hey, I'm in wave two, because it's a 2 minute. It looks like they're doing 2 minute. If you look at the times, 2 minutes between waves in a beast or a super, that might be a really fun, stress-free way of racing. Once you get to the bigger races, like I don't see Kempson or some of those guys like saying, hey, you want to hang out and do it? No, they're all going to line up at the start, and then everyone else is going to want to as well.
They did that for OCR Worlds 3K in Canada. That was the year when Ryan Atkins won the race, but didn't beat John Albin head-to-head, but he had a faster time trial, essentially, because Atkins and Hunter and maybe you were in that first wave.
Yeah, baby.
And then all the UK people decided to wait until the end, and they thought they'd run faster. Didn't work.
I think they didn't. Yeah, I don't know what it was. Some of them didn't get in, some did, and they just decided, let's just go last.
Yeah, I think it might have been like, you know, some people are just unwilling to give up their spot, and they're like, hey, if we can't race together, like, I don't want to do it. Maybe one of you guys will be the sacrificial lamb and like take it out hard so we keep a respectable pace, and then John's going to do his thing at the end. That could have been the case, but they've done it. There's a precedent to it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. I like it from like a mind games perspective, or people who have like race anxiety or something like that. Like if you it's too stressful for you, yeah, run too. I do not like it from a sport perspective. There's no way, unless it's true time trial, like every 30 seconds we're sending off two people. If it's not that, put everyone in the same race.
Put them in the, that doesn't make, that's lame.
Should you have 150 like people just go off again like they used to?
We won't have that many, right?
Well, that's one thing I was going to bring up that I do like about this new system is just like the optics in terms of like the how it looks on paper. It looks like there were 89 athletes in the female like competitive raid, which there were, and
that's good,
because 300 in the men's.
Well, that's there used to be plus like age group.
Exactly. So last year would be like two elite women and seven elite men. Yeah. And now it's like, okay, this is an elite race again. This is like a big thing, like people are participating in, where last year it looked really bad.
You also have everybody just waiting to go off, and you build that anticipation. It's like, all right, you guys are up, 2 minutes to go. They do that in marathons. Like the wave starts, not really that different.
It's one of those things that like a corporation would do, say, hey, we're really struggling for female pro participation. So what if we call age group competitive and pro competitive? Suddenly we have 78 more per race.
Right.
Like it doesn't change who's there, but it looks better on paper, but it does actually, it worked.
Yeah, it looks better.
Don't forget, this is only for local races. For all the national series races, you need to have had, Seattle, the regional championship, you basically need an overall podium, not a within your age group, but like a top three finish in this new competitive heat, or top 15 in elite last year, or top 10. Look up the rules.
Top 20 gets you into these.
Yep.
Podium gets you into gated at
Seattle.
Top 20 gets you into a national series.
But then top 20 on a national series gets you into Seattle as well.
Top 20 overall, not top 20 in your competitive age group. It is, you are one of the top 20 fastest finishers of the day, not within your subdivision.
Let's back this up a little bit. We're talking about how to qualify into the races throughout the season.
And Jacksonville, month away. But you want a local.
I want to talk, because we were talking about this as well, like talk about how the funneling works in terms of the qualification system, because this is something that was news to me last week, because we've been talking about Seattle going and hanging out, kicking it. And now it's like, might not be able to happen.
No, you can't.
So it funnels from a regional race like SoCal. You have to run one of those to then qualify for a series race.
Correct.
How far back are they going for Jacksonville? Like, how were people getting into Jacksonville?
Last year, 2023. So, like, I don't know how far back into 23, but I got an email from Michigan.
You're in?
Yeah, I have my pro card for this year, man. Not Seattle. It gets me into the series.
So you can just show up at...
I can go to
Jacksonville or Big Bear.
But I must go to Jacksonville, Big Bear, or Utah in order to be able to go to Seattle. And you must finish top 20, I believe.
I do not believe that there is a free pass to Seattle.
So top three in a regional, top 20 in a national series to get you into... Okay.
And I don't know how roll downs will work. Like if you get 20th in Jacksonville and you show up to Big Bear and you also get top 20, does your spot get rolled down to the next person?
Probably. Yeah. The way they have done it in the past.
Most likely.
But like
from a finance standpoint, yeah, they'd want as many signups.
More bodies.
Oh yeah.
The issue is there are only three races in the national series You've got Jacksonville, Big Bear, and Utah, and it says top 20 make it, and there are only 50 spots available in the pro wave for Seattle. Like, do you think 50 out of 60 people who have a qualifying spot are gonna end up racing in Seattle?
They only have a fifth. Why would they cap it at 50?
I thought that's what I said.
I'm not challenging you. I'm challenging them.
Oh yeah, and I might be wrong. I just want to I'll verify, but I thought that was the case, which is pretty surprising.
Yeah, I don't know.
We need. I'm
remains I'm gonna, to be seen.
I'm going protest. Spartan protest 24. Let us in that race.
And
not do any of the stuff that they want us to do. That's just one thing. From a company standpoint, all right, we're harsh on Spartan, but for like the awareness of where they are in the landscape for competitive athletes is just like super low. If they're thinking that they can just put this like sort of like challenging qualifier system in when numbers have been down.
Right.
Like, and expect there to be a good championship race at the end of it. Like,
I think elite numbers have been down. You still have had pretty solid elite plus competitive or elite plus age group in the past. Over time, it's stayed pretty similar. Just more people seem to have gone to age group.
Okay. To Rich's point, like Vijay made a post. Let's get all the OGs.
Bring the big dogs out. BK, I want you out best. There.
He didn't say my name. He tagged me after the fact. That's even more of a chip.
That's bad.
Were you tagged early or later in the?
I don't know. I wasn't spoken. My name wasn't spoken, which means
he wasn't tagged. He was added in like with all the hashtags and like at Bracken Crocker.
Yeah,
like,
it did at B. He was trying to do someone else. He's there's Bracken.
A day and a half Bracken. Later.
Ah, you know what? It's easier to hit enter than delete all those letters. Yeah. Let him have this. But of the names he mentioned, let's say Woods. Hobie, Killian, myself, not that I'm in that class, but the people that aren't really doing Spartan Elite or Pro anymore, whatever you want to call it, what are we more likely to do? Show up to Seattle because it's a cool thing and it's a one-off, or go do a qualifier in order to go hang out in Seattle? Like, that's going to remove most of us. Like, I would do Seattle. Great. Woods would probably do it. Hobie might. Killian might. We don't want to go find a qualifier early and then go out. If we do go to one, like our decision was already made, but adding a barrier to entry, I don't think helps the pro field.
You'd have to do one race that won't pay. You'd have to do another race that will pay very little. Like what are the national series races? The 1500, 1005? What is it for?
Nothing.
Nothing. National series race? End.
Remember they said stay tuned for prize money and then
you don't win any money at Jacksonville?
None. Series payout and North American champs.
So you got to run two races for no money, travel to them. One.
They have to do two. Yes, they have to do two.
There we go.
What?
I'm happy about that. I'm happy about that.
What did you do? What did you possibly?
That was this one. That was the peace sign. It's apparently balloons.
I could go do one, but Woods would have to do two.
I would have to do two.
You'd have to do two.
Okay, I'm on Zendesk, so I know where my 50 number came from. So racers can qualify for the pro championship heat at a given tier for the following criteria: national series race, top three in competitive at any race in 2024, or have a top 15 elite finish in 2023. So I'm assuming January 1st, 2023, all of last year. If you ran elite and you were top 15, you're good.
You're into the national series.
Or if you get, yes, you can compete in Jacksonville, Big Bear, or Utah in the pro wave. And there's a bolded thing. Qualification is not required for the age group championship heat. So if you want to run age group or competitive, I guess,
great.
I think they're going to have age group at the national series races, but they're going to have competitive, which is combined everything at your local ones.
Yes.
But anyway, so that's national series races. Then regional championship, which is Seattle that we're talking about. And same thing with Europe where
Jack,
and,
I actually can
around
I,
the world. Yeah.
I do still believe that it's the same gated system. It's just an added elite or pro at the North American series. I don't think they're doing age group waves.
What? They should.
I could be very wrong on that, but the way I read it is that there's not.
I wouldn't doubt that, but that would be stupid.
So they're pretty intentional with their wording of competitive, and then they specifically mention age group championship heats. So okay. I think you might be wrong.
Hopefully
there.
You're right.
Yeah, that would be
because I think that's a thing that people will pursue.
Hell yeah.
Within the age group division, and they have shown that it worked. They had a whole series dedicated for it last year. I think they should keep age group heats.
Well, I think that there's still going to be the results for it. I just thought it was still combined like regional races, but maybe I'm wrong on that. So my question is then, if Rich wants to get in to Seattle, based on what you just read off, and he didn't do a race last year.
I didn't go over the Seattle thing. Seattle is top 20 finish at a 2024 National Series race. So nothing you did in 2023 will get you into Seattle.
But nothing, he didn't do 2023, so he doesn't have a way into Jacksonville or Utah or Big Bear. And if Jacksonville's his only one he can get to, he has to find a race before Jacksonville in the U.S. And since this just came to light last week, how many opportunities remain?
Right. Any? Are there any?
Arizona, maybe. Las Vegas.
Same race.
Yeah.
No, Henderson now has its own.
I was going to say, I think they have a separate one.
It's just Nevada. Arizona. Do you think I could qualify at the Hurricane Heat in Vermont?
Yeah, top 15.
I would rather not ever race again than have to do a Hurricane Heat. That sounds like everything I don't want out of life.
Not you want goofy games. It's not my thing.
Possibly.
And then and then regionally, right? Like when is the one Colorado race that
in middle of June?
So I could run that.
It's a month after DECA Fit Colorado. So you would have to.
But you'd have to go top three.
You'd have to. Yeah. I saw.
I'm not saying you can't.
Rich got top three at that race.
I'm just saying
I can do it in the sprint, though, right? I can do it in like whatever race.
So the thing is, a lot of these races, did they have? This is a trifecta. Weekend, did they have a competitive heat in the sprint? Because historically on trifecta weekends, they've only done the beast and the super. So you'd have to run one of those.
And when I say you'd have to go top three, is that if someone comes out and it's their only shot and they miss their spear, like last year, top 15 times make it. This year, it's only three. If you're traveling to a race to get your qualifier and you haven't raced in 2 years and you miss your spear because they have the new smaller targets, you might miss your qualifier.
For sure.
It's really hard to get in. This is what we wanted in 2014 when you had 300 people per elite wave. Mm-hmm. Now it's the reverse. You've got six. They had to expand it to age group, but now no one. Many people can't get in.
But you have to realize so that to race in Big Bear and Utah, which would probably be the two that you would be affected by the most if you can't end up running this Arizona one, Rich. Veerman lives in Colorado, already has a free pass from last year. He doesn't need to show up to Fort Carson to do that. But DJ, they're not offering money. He got top three at a race last year. I got my top 15 finish. Like a lot of people are not going to necessarily need it.
Then but you might have like a buzzsaw like Baylen Bean coming down. I guess.
What if they go anyway?
Yeah, that's like, true. It's like cool. Colorado.
Is there a roll down?
It's sweet. Josh Reed comes out. You know?
Yeah. I don't know if there's a roll down.
If there's no roll down, let's just say Veerman. VJ and Josh Reed show up.
Looks like a better start training. Qualifying?
Yeah.
Better start training.
You're not getting three new people through.
A little bit of this.
Oh, yeah.
So what's it say about DECA?
I should look that up. Yeah. It ties in.
Is there a pipeline?
It doesn't say any Spartan race. It just says top 15. Oh, it says top 15 elite. We were in DECA elite.
I didn't finish the world championships. You think that's going to play against me?
2013, you got yourself a top 15 elite DECA finish in Pennsylvania.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm in. Count me in.
Yeah.
I'm
the first year of Tough Mudder being owned by Spartan, they had this legacy path in. If you had ever taken top three, if you had ever made a Spartan World Championship podium or Ultra podium, you were in. And so I was qualified for a contender at World's Toughest.
At World's
based
Toughest.
Off a 20, based off a 2012 Spartan result.
Yeah. So
if they were willing to do it for that, you should get in off DECA 1 year prior.
Hell yeah. I don't think that that's crazy. I like where they stand in terms of the sport of things. I think they should just be like, you want to race?
Legacy everything.
Come on. Like, yeah, Ryan Kent, we want you out here.
Would
same thing for him. Like,
he's going to have to do the same
thing that I would have to do.
And he wants to.
Doing that.
But all of us have talked about it in some capacity. Like, yeah. That would be cool to get back, get the band back together. Let's find out. Let's have one fun. Race. Yeah. And now everyone's like, man, I'm not doing a qualifier.
They want me to do three Spartan races? No way.
Yeah.
No chance.
Yeah.
Want to do one? I'll sell you four. For the price of five.
Right. So I'll just finish this up. So regional championship Seattle, if you get top 20 at a national series race, that's when you can do it. And if you want to compete in worlds, top 50 finish at the pro championship race at any 2024 regional championship race. So in it's theory, easier. Europe, APAC, North America.
In my opinion, pick any Spartan race throughout the calendar year. It is harder to go top three there than it is to go top 20 at a national series than it is to go top 50 at a regional championship.
Because you get in, there are up to 60 people who will be allowed to race in this regional championship, and they're saying top 50, you're good, let's go. Yeah. And you might have
one out of every five, you're in.
Yeah. Or you miss. Five out of every six, you're in.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll trust your math. All I know is that it's harder to get into the first race than it is to get into world championship once you're in their pipeline.
This almost feels like Hyrox.
This isn't good.
You're in. You're not in. You can't race.
This isn't good.
I eagerly await their addendum to this coming out.
That's true.
60 minutes after this episode airs.
Because they will change things without any real reason. Like, this doesn't seem like it's... Like, they're like, again, they don't understand the landscape of where they are. Right.
Someone with an accent will get on with Mappy Davis and say, all right, listen, what we do in F1 is this. And then it'll change the rules.
He's not in charge doing this. It's Chris Malpe.
Does he know that? Has anyone told him?
I think he knows. Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Dave's a good guy.
All right. So that's where we are in Spartan. For
what was that accent?
That wasn't too bad.
That was a bad accent.
It was somewhere in the...
It's like Australian Irish.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it was definitely in the Southern Hemisphere.
Crikey bloke.
In the Pacific somewhere. I thought it was fine. I thought it was not bad.
If someone who's traveled the world...
Let us know, would that have passed in your country?
No, it never passes in their country. Would it pass in like Indiana for an Australian accent? That's the question.
Yeah. You should go to the...
Roadshow.
Indiana Roadshow Ultra... DECA with a New Zealand flag and see how that goes.
Bracken, you went to New Zealand, right?
I did.
Do you like try to, you don't really have much of an accent because middle America is pretty neutral, but
depends who you ask.
He's got a little something.
Yeah. But do you like, did you lay into your American accent a little bit or just were you like, oh
no,
crap,
I go gonna, local.
You go local?
I'm like Downey in Tropic Thunder. I go all the way in.
I'm
method act.
All right, real quick with on the B side, Caitlin Frump took the W on the women's. Noelle Morrow was second. Jessica Radford finished in third. This is for the Beast.
Anthony, is Caitlin one of Kirk's athletes?
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the name somewhere else. She did well. Yeah.
She did a lot of races last year.
Yeah.
Several podiums.
It was a name that I've seen. Mm-hmm. Anthony Kunkel took the win for the Beast, and these were pretty fast course. This course seemed pretty fast. I mean, Caitlin was under 2 hours, just barely, but still.
Shoe talk, Jack. Cover your ears, earmuffs. See what Kunkel ran in for the Beast?
Yeah. No.
Vaporfly 3.
No way. Jeez. What?
Tells you what kind of course it is.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, so that we're non-technical. Boy, the threes out there. Jeez, can you get your?
Oh, the threes are the most stables.
But I'm saying, like, can you even get those? Are those ones that are sold out? The Alpha 5s you basically can't get right now, right?
You can't get Alpha, no.
You can get Vapors, though?
Yeah, you can find Vapors. I mean, right now on Nike, they are, you can get like size 14.
Right. All right. Jack's got that.
I think the full price ones you can still get in decent sizes.
Andrew Chapman took second and Eddie Sanchez in third. This is for the Beast on
Eddie Sanchez is typically an athlete who I think he's in 44, 45 years old. So basically he got overall podium and won't take first in the 40 to 45. So
does that count toward your?
He'll be able to race pro.
Yeah.
Because of this. Well, if he wants to.
He can still, but this is a race that doesn't really mean anything. So he can still.
Yeah.
Doesn't really, yeah.
By what we said last year, he's now disqualified from age group ever again this year.
This guy's pro,
Eddie,
man.
I'm sorry.
Should have thought it through before doing well.
Shouldn't be so good.
Yeah. Stop crushing it.
On the super, we saw Natalie Miano out there taking the win for the super. Caitlin Frump ended in second, and Jessica Radford was third.
Nick good Mulch, to see Natalie. Healthy-ish.
Exactly.
I don't know how healthy, which is why I say ish, but she's running.
Enough to win.
Two-minute win over Caitlin, who won the Beast the day before.
And you said this is the super, Rich?
Yes.
So there was no sprint competitive like we were thinking because it's a trifecta weekend.
There is... I mean, there is results. Like, Anthony Kunkel is the first one on the sprint.
Okay. What's it labeled?
You know, they can just change this. They can just change this for whatever it needs to be.
We never addressed that.
Hold on. I'm not done with the results.
Yeah.
Nick Moultrie wins the super. John Howard, the third, ended up second. And Orlando Lopez in third. Ethan Brown down here fourth. Anthony Kunkel fifth. Pretty competitive heat for the Saturday, for the Sunday super.
Yeah.
Is there a dressing? Do we need to address?
Well, back when we did the ranking of Mount Rushmore and everything and people's placing in the okras for the season, one of my big arguments is that because the Beast in Abu Dhabi was not a world championship label on their website or in their social media, that it did not weigh into my considerations for Atkins as overall athlete of the year or for his world championship title haul. And then we received a very informative, impassioned message from a listener who has a role in Spartan and stated that internally it was always considered a world championship and we shouldn't think any differently, and that the verbiage would be changed. And by the end of the weekend, the results on their live tracking had changed from Beast to World Championship Beast, making Ryan Atkins the first retroactive winner of a world championship in the history of our sport.
I wonder if
outside of the DHEA year.
That's true. But well, he didn't win.
That was a team race they were DQ'd from.
Right. Okay.
They won the team race. So
I'm low in that too.
Spartan totem pole has now shifted again, and we might have to give out the first retroactive male athlete of the year okra to Ryan Atkins because he won two world titles in the same weekend now.
Same weekend.
No, Vijay won.
Vijay won though.
You got third.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
I just always assume he wins at least one.
Yeah, I forgot that guy.
And he did.
I'm hoping
he won a world title.
I wonder if I can get in the back end of these results and change the 2021 Sunday Super at West Virginia to also a North American championship. And then
world
I could be the
championship.
No, because I was the North American championship.
Okay. Yeah.
I would be okay with a super North American.
Yeah, you got first there.
Yeah. Let's just change it.
Yeah. So I'm on their website right now, and it says super. If you click super or beast, you drop down a new. There are four drop downs, and then a fifth one appears, and it says category, and you can see competitive open. If you do that for the sprint, which they had a Sunday and a Saturday sprint, there's no category to choose from. So my gut is that it's just open,
standalone open.
Yeah.
And you to any viewer that I confused, Ryan Atkins did win a world championship, and Spartan does consider the Beast in Abu Dhabi a world championship, like not, any other world championship.
Not recognized by RaceBring.
Which matters.
Jack recognizes it.
Rich is podcasting under protest.
This whole thing, Spartan Protest 24, it's going to make as big of a difference as the first Spartan Protest did.
We caused COVID.
Oh,
good luck.
Please don't do that again.
You brought the entire industry of live events to its knees.
To their knees. You guys should have got a scimitar above their head.
They should have gave you what you asked for. Those travel stipends, not worth it.
Yeah. You guys don't have any ROI. All right.
We're going to show you.
All right, bud.
Jack, we got about 30 minutes. What do you need for this?
You want to do it another time?
Do we need some expansive?
Well, I wanted to talk about, I have some numbers pulled up on like what people have made through the years and comparing like the highest earners across the years, but also like which events, how money's changed over time. I just think we're going to like really be glossing over it. And I did spend a decent chunk of time on it.
Let's push it. Next week, this weekend, we have a HYROX event in Italy, but then next week we're going to want a draft for Vienna. Right?
Next week?
Right?
It is February. Yeah. The week before, yeah. Yeah. I would say if we can do a half episode or something like that, then
sure,
we're good. Yeah. Just 20, 30 minutes is a little short.
Careful, for us. That's like 0 minutes.
Zero. That's one big inhale.
Unless you want to just talk about races and then we can dive into the athletes next time.
I have a cautionary tale for you. The last time someone tried doing what athletes want, it kicked off a big old shitstorm of people getting their feelings hurt and butt hurt and reaching out and demanding retractions and addendums and apologies. And are you ready to either say, I'm not changing anything the way Rich and I would, or are you going to go the route that the last person did and had to make adjustments every time someone was offended that their income was incorrectly stated?
I'm listing it today. I would only be listing, here is what was published on Zendesk, and this is what Spartan allegedly paid. We'll go into
put on your fragile OCR lens ego glasses and decide, are people going to get super butthurt?
If you flash any, I'm going to do it anyway, so I don't care. Nice. But if you flash up any like, oh yeah, here's a disclaimer. This is only reported race earnings, not sponsorships or anything else like that. And all I did was convert it from, if you were in 2012, like what would that be worth today? And then added it up.
You did inflation.
Yeah, I did inflate.
Man, that's going to make people mad.
Yeah.
All right.
But we can do the races. We'll do the races in the series. Cause like we already talked about that, how Rich was kind of shocked that there was no prize money within the series, but at the end of the year there is, and just kind of seeing how it's changed.
Hey squad, sorry for the abrupt ending here. We did a deep dive on a lot of the money giveaways that some of these brands have dished out over the past 10 to 12 years or so. And it ran a little long for the episode, so we're going to make that Patreon only. So you can make sure if you're interested in this type of information and you would love to support us on Patreon, you can do that and check out all this information that Jack spent a ton of time getting. And it's real interesting seeing the trends in how the prize purses have changed over the years, what we can project going forward, and what we can learn for spaces like hybrid down the road. And we're going to talk about this similar type of topic in a few weeks and how that relates to the health of the professional athlete, quote unquote, in the OCR and hybrid space. So we appreciate you listening. Check us out over on Patreon if you are interested in this type of content. But appreciate you sticking it out with us as always. We'll talk to you soon.